Are you looking for ways to strengthen your marriage? Would you like to raise children you enjoy being around? Do you long for a peaceful, orderly home that's a blessing to everyone who comes through its doors? Then you've come to the right place. I'm Jennifer Flanders, a Bible-believing, homeschooling mother to 12 and host of the Loving Life at Home podcast. Join me as we discover what God's Word has to say about marriage, motherhood, and minding the things that matter most. Hello, friend. Thank you for joining me for episode 38 of Loving Life at Home. A couple of weeks ago, I was asked to address a local mom's group on the topic of learning styles. They figured with 12 children and 20-plus grandkids, I probably have experience dealing with all different kinds of learning style. And they're right. So today, I thought I'd share on the podcast some of the things I told that room full of young moms about children's various learning styles and how that knowledge should affect the way we parent. A lot of times when people find out that I have 12 children, they say things like, oh my goodness, I don't know how you do it. I only have one and he drives me crazy, or I only have two and they run me ragged. And when I start asking questions, it quickly becomes apparent that the two that they have are toddlers, maybe a newborn and a two-year-old. And I tell them, listen, two-year-olds will run anybody ragged. My two-year-olds ran me ragged when they were that age. And what they don't understand is that I don't have 12 two-year-olds. By the time my youngest was two, my oldest was married and had children of his own. And so there's a wide variety of ages in my 12. They're not all babies at once. They're not all toddlers at once. And so God really is so faithful to give you what you need as you need it. And that goes for the wisdom and the strength to raise your kids too. And so I like to encourage these young moms to keep two verses in mind. First, Galatians 6:9, that says, let us not grow weary while doing good, for in due season we will reap if we do not lose heart. And I know it is hard when your children are all little, but don't give up. Keep on keeping on. Keep putting in the work and investing the time to train them well, and it will pay off. And I'm on the other side of it now. All of my children are much older. My youngest is about to turn 14, and over half of them are grown and out of the nest. Five of them are married with children of their own, and it looks so much different now than it did when they were little. And I get so much more sleep now than I did when they were little. It's just such a short season. I know that you probably hear that a lot from older people, to savor it while it lasts because it won't last long, but it's really true. So keep that in mind. Also, I love the fact that God promises in James 1:5 that if any of us lack wisdom, we can ask of God, who gives to all generously and without reproach, and it will be given to us. And so as we talk about things like learning styles and how to use that knowledge in training up our children in the way they should go, I encourage you that God is at the ready to give you all the wisdom that you need for the task at hand of raising your children. So with that in mind, let's look at learning styles. Back when I was first starting my family, people only ever talked about three learning styles: visual, auditory, and kinesthetic. Visual learners retain information most easily when they can see it with their own eyes and study it in detail. So if you have a visual learner, you're going to want to provide plenty of picture books and graphs and maps and other resources that they can look at and read and observe visually and pour over to their heart's content. As it happens, I'm very visual, and if I can study something long enough and closely enough, whether it's a picture or a math problem or a crochet doily or a quilt block or painting style, I usually can recall and recreate it. That's why whenever I'm introduced to new people, I've learned to ask them to spell their name for me. If I can picture their name in my mind's eye all spelled out like it would be on a sheet of paper, then I can usually remember it. Whereas if I only hear their name during a brief introduction, it will likely go in one ear and out the other, and I will have forgotten it before they even finish their first sentence. The second classic learning style is auditory. Unlike me, auditory learners learn and retain information best when they can hear it. Their ears, not their eyes, are the fastest route to the memory centers of their brains. So for auditory learners, you'll want to provide lots of verbal explanations. Let them listen to audiobooks. Use repetitive poems and songs and language CDs. Read aloud to them over and over again, explaining as you go. I have several kids who are great auditory learners. I remember one in particular, my Benjamin, who as a very young child would play quietly on the floor at my feet while I was reading history and literature books to his older siblings in our homeschool lessons. He'd be involved with his Lincoln Logs or Duplo blocks and not appear to be paying a lick of attention, but afterwards, even months later, he would be able to quote clearly and accurately and often verbatim the facts and the dates and the concepts that we were discussing. He remembered a lot more of that information as well or better than I did, and I was the one who read it out loud in the first place. Then the third classic learning style is kinesthetic. Kinesthetic learners prefer hands-on activities and lessons that involve movement, clapping, stomping, sign language. So if you want to help a kinesthetic learner excel, give them lots of manipulatives and puzzles and thinking games. Give them tools and teach them a variety of handcrafts. Take them on nature walks and let them play sports and do science experiments with them. Sign them up for gymnastics or woodworking or dance or music lessons. Go on walks, bike rides, climb trees, and let them burn off energy running and playing. Of course, these are good things to do with all your children, whether they're kinesthetic learners or not, but kinesthetic kids will especially benefit from a more hands-on approach. For years and years, those three classic learning styles were all the experts ever talked about. But as I was preparing for my recent talk, I learned that the old pie chart has been expanded since the last time I looked at it. One of the charts I found had four categories of learners, not three. The three that we had already talked about, visual, auditory, and kinesthetic, plus one more labeled reading/writing. But if you think about it, reading and writing are really just subcategories of visual and kinesthetic. You read with your eyes, you write with your hands. So they're kind of just splitting hairs there, I think. They're also separating kids who learn best from looking at pictures and graphs and maps from those who learn by looking at the written word. Then somebody else came up with a bright idea of splitting auditory learners into similar categories, aural and verbal or linguistic. So you may see learning style charts that differentiate between kids who learn through sounds like music and rhythm and other noises, which they label as aural learners, A-U-R-A-L, aural learners, from those who learn by listening to lectures and audiobooks and verbal explanations, which they label as verbal or linguistic learners. And of course, if we're separating kids out who learn by reading books and kids who learn by hearing words, we have to acknowledge the fact that some children don't do either of those tasks very well. Their brains are more wired for math and logic than they are for language and reading. So now you'll see charts on learning styles that also include logical or mathematical learners as one of the options. Then somebody else noticed that some kids learn best in group settings. They want to be around other people, they're extroverts, and so now you will sometimes see a social learner segment on that learning styles pie chart. And if we add social learning to the chart, we have to acknowledge the fact that other kids are introverts and prefer to do their learning alone, where they'll not be distracted by what other people are doing. So some charts now list solitary learners right next to the social learners. I even saw one chart that included natural learners. These are the kids who love to be outdoors. I've definitely had a few of those. They are born adventurers. My third-born David would definitely fit into that category. Outside was one of the first words he learned how to say, and by age two, I had to watch him like a hawk. In the blink of an eye, he could scramble over our fence, dart down the alley, and climb the fence into a neighbor's yard to pet their dog. He soon learned, though, that he wouldn't have to climb fences if he just went out the back door through the garage. And also at age two, he learned that if he climbed up on our workbench, he could reach the button that operated the automatic garage door opener. So one Saturday morning, we heard cries for help coming from our garage. And when we went to investigate, we found David hanging by his fingertips from the top of the garage ceiling because he had put the door up, ran and caught a ride up on the door, and then didn't quite know how to get down once he was left hanging there. Another time, we were shopping yard sales, and of course, that's outdoors too, and we had stopped at a sale where they had lots of toys, and when it came time to go, I took David back and buckled him into his car seat and then started loading the other kids. This was back before they had 5-point harnesses on children's seats, and so if you could like bend yourself up like a pretzel, you could squeeze your head out from between those two straps and exit the car seat. And that is exactly what David did. Again, 2 years old, he got out of his car seat after I had buckled him in and slipped out the driver's side unnoticed while I was strapping his brothers and sisters into the car. So then once everybody is buckled, or I think everybody's buckled safely into the car, I hop into the driver's side, close the door, and head toward home. And we got almost halfway home before one of the kids in the back seat mentioned that David wasn't in his seat. And my heart just about stopped, or actually it went into fibrillation. And I spun that car around as fast as I could and headed back to the garage sale, praying at the top of my voice all the way that God would protect my precious boy and keep him safe until I could get back to pick him up. Meanwhile, my oldest son sat in shocked silence in the back seat, dumbfounded that his mother could pull such a prank, while my daughter, who was about 4 at the time, sobbed, "Oh, Mommy, and David was such a good brother too." Now, fortunately, when we got back to the yard sale, nobody, including David, had noticed that we even left, and he was perfectly fine, still playing outside in the front yard with those toys that they were trying to sell. And so we got him, took him home. He survived somehow his childhood, grew up. Now he is an army dentist, but he's still a born adventurer. They had him stationed in Germany, and he went on 100-mile marches and climbed the tallest peak in Germany and skied the Alps in every country they bordered, Switzerland, Austria, Italy, and Germany. And then the army sent him to Hawaii, where he scuba dived and snorkeled to his heart's content. And now he's about to head to South Korea. So still loves being outdoors. He has 3 children, soon to be 4, and they love being outdoors with him. So it all worked out. Then, as long as we're getting super specific with these learning styles, after raising 12 children, I can suggest even more categories. Categories I've never seen on any list. The first one I would add would be oral learners, O-R-A-L, oral learners. These would be those kids that put everything in their mouth. Have you ever seen or raised one like that? Our Rebecca definitely fit into this category. She nearly choked to death before she ever even learned how to walk because she found a tiny little plastic propeller from one of her siblings' toy helicopters on the floor under the bed and got it lodged in her throat. Her father saw her gasping for breath and turning blue on the floor and snatched her up and somehow, by God's grace and mercy, managed to dislodge that thing. But when Becca was a baby, I had to sweep multiple times a day and vacuum under all the sofa cushions and clean out every corner and crevice of the house. And I also had to keep the kitchen trash behind a locked door, or else she would be swallowing every crust and crumb and disgusting piece of refuse that she could get her hands on. We really had to watch her closely whenever we went out to eat, or she would glean the used chewing gum from underneath the restaurant tables. The worst story happened, I can't remember if we were at SeaWorld or Disney World or where exactly, but it was an amusement park, and sometime before noon, Rebecca told me she needed to go potty. So we went to the ladies' room. There was a line, so we waited, and as soon as the stall opened up, we hurried into it, and I realized as soon as we stepped in that there were gummy bears all over the floor. It looked like somebody dumped a huge bag full just all over the floor. And so I said, "Rebecca, do not pick up any of that candy. Do not touch it. It is not good to eat. It is nasty and filled with germs." So I helped her do her business and hurried her back outside as quickly as possible before she had a chance to pick up any of those gummy bears off the floor. Or so I thought. Unbeknownst to me, she had stepped on one of the gummy bears, maybe even intentionally, and ground it in while I was focusing on her hands and not letting her bend over and pick it up. So at the end of the day, as we were leaving the park, I glanced back at her in her car seat and saw that she had slipped off her sandal and was licking that gummy bear off the bottom of her shoe after having walked all over that park with it stuck to her foot. She somehow, by God's unfathomable grace, survived to adulthood as well. She's now a nurse and really has a heart for mission. She plans to do disaster relief, but she hardly ever gets sick, and she credits her robust immune system to all that early germ exposure, and tells her siblings, you know, I may be eating all sorts of things that I would not naturally pick when I'm overseas in these war-torn countries, and so I've had plenty of training for that. And another kind of learner I've had is a very orderly learner. Have you ever seen these kids that are born organizers? They are a little bit rare, but they do exist. I had one of them too. They line up their little matchbox cars and they sort their Legos by color and style. They fold and file their t-shirts in tidy little rows in their drawers. That was my Samuel to a T. When he was about 7, I think, I woke up early one morning and was cleaning out the far bathroom on the other end of the house from all the bedrooms, okay? And so I was in there cleaning, and I noticed in the cabinet under the sink that there was a little stack of clothes. It was Samuel's blue jeans and a shirt, pair of underwear, socks. I think his shoes were even with it. Anyway, I thought, I don't know what this is doing in my bathroom cabinet, but I took it out and put everything back where it belonged. And then as soon as he woke up the next morning, he went into that bathroom and came out in a panic and says, Mom, Mom, what happened to my clothes I had stored in the bathroom? And I told him I'd put them away, but Mom, that was the outfit I was planning to wear for my birthday. His birthday was still 8 months away. And I said, Samuel, I promise I will do laundry again before your birthday. You may have even grown out of your favorite outfit by your birthday, so you need to just go ahead and keep wearing it until it's time. I promise I'll have it clean if that's the one you want to wear. So still very organized. He grew up to be an anesthesiologist, just like his dad. And that's the perfect career for somebody that is meticulous and detail-oriented. You would want somebody that's a little bit OCD watching over you and keeping you alive while you're having surgery, right? So it worked out perfectly. Incidentally, this child also told me that he did not really learn how to read until he had graduated from medical school and was studying for his wards. So there's that too. Obviously, he could read enough to get into medical school, but he definitely is a visual learner as well, and realized that if he could just find charts and graphs that contained the information he needed to memorize, he would do much better than reading all the words. And so I guess there's an example of where the words and the pictures are a different route to your memory banks in your brain. Another kind of learners are competitive learners. I have a son that turns everything into a contest or game. He is so much fun. He would have made a great coach because he's so good at motivating people to give 110%. He loved playing tag when he was growing up, and he'd tell his siblings, if you can catch me, I'll give you candy or do your chore. He is great at inventing games and leveling the playing field so that all ages could play together. I remember a couple of times in grade school, he came and tried to get me up at 3 or 4 in the morning to do his homeschool lessons because he wanted to be finished in time to be on the tennis court at dawn with his older brothers. Benjamin is still very competitive. He still loves to play games and make up contest. And like so many of his siblings, he grew up to be a nurse and works in the ICU, but he takes a night shift so that affords him more time with his family at home where he can play with his wife and kids, which of course they love as much as he does. I guess we should probably include night owls and early risers in our group of different learning styles as well, because I've had both. I have some that get up bright and early. Samuel was that way. Even as a little child, he would get up at 5 and sit quietly beside me doing math drills while I worked on computer stuff. And then when he was in high school, he'd get up at 5. And instead of doing math at 5, he would do violin at 5. But he'd go to the opposite end of the house and shut himself off in the utility room so that he didn't disturb the sleeping family while he practiced his violin. And then once he had practiced for an hour, he would come out and we would do calculus together. So he is definitely an early riser. Ben was an early riser there for a while. Joseph was a real early riser too. He would do lessons and then go walk dogs for the neighborhood. He had a job even at 12 or 13 walking neighborhood dogs, and he would walk 6 miles a day for the various neighbors that he worked for. So that could be two more categories of learning styles, the ones that stay up late and study way into the wee hours of the morning, and others that go to bed early and get up and study then. When I was in college, I was definitely the night owl, but after years of being a mother to so many children, I am exhausted at the end of the day. I could not stay up late to save my life to do any kind of meaningful study or learning, but I can get up super early and do great. Another learning style would be the inquisitive type of learner, the ones that are always asking why. Why is grass green? Why do birds fly? Why do stars shine? My Isaac was very much that way, and he still ponders deep questions all the time. Now he's studying chemical engineering, so his questions are considerably more cerebral than they were when he was growing up, but he still loves to ask them and discuss them with me, questions involving the speed of light or sine waves or logarithms and math problems he's working on. Can you prove that e raised to the power of pi is greater than pi raised to the power of e? And that sort of thing. So there's your inquisitive learners. Another kind of learner is the one that is constantly testing limits. Have you had any of those? That is a way of learning as well. When our son Joseph was little, he could take anything apart and he could unlock any door. When we moved to Tyler, he figured out how to unlock every door that we had to our house. And so we had to install little brass flip locks way up high, higher than he could reach when he was so young. It didn't take him very long to realize that he could push a ladder back chair up against the door and climb the rungs to reach the lock and flip it over. He figured out how that one was made also and how it worked. And the bad thing about that is that he would cover his tracks. He would push that ladder back chair up against the door long enough to climb up and unlock it, but then he would climb down and put the chair back where it went before he exited the door. So one morning, I remember thinking that he was still asleep in his crib. He still slept in a crib. He was literally 2 years old. But I got a knock at the front door at about 7 o'clock in the morning, and I opened the door to find my neighbor there standing, holding my son Joseph by the hand. And he said, "Look what showed up on my front porch this morning." This was a neighbor that routinely gave my children candy. And so I guess Joseph woke up hungry and decided that that's what he wanted for breakfast. So I thought, what in the world is going on? Did he climb out a window or something? But upon investigation, I realized he had unlocked that flip lock and gone out the back door. Our yard was fenced with an 8-foot wooden fence, but there was one little section about a foot long that adjoined a neighbor's yard that was chain link. And the way I know that he climbed over the chain link fence to get to the neighbor's yard one street over, the neighbor that brought him home, is that he had left his diaper behind on the chain link. It got caught as he was going over, and he just left it and went on. And so when my neighbor brought him back, he was in his little t-shirt, and that's it. But thankfully, that neighbor brought him home to me. Another time, this child was supposed to be in bed taking a nap, and I heard a pop, and then all the lights in the house went out. And when I went to investigate, I found, you know, we had plug covers on all of our outlets, but we had a real flat nightlight that pressed right up against the wall in one of the outlets. And while Joseph was supposed to be sleeping, instead, he found a penny and he slid it down behind that flat nightlight, and it landed right between the two prongs on the electrical plug of the nightlight and shorted the circuit and threw the breaker. And and also left a big black smoke stain on the wall from where it happened. So it just is some kind of a miracle that that child survived to adulthood, but he did, and I survived also. And he is today an electrician, but he still does handyman work on the side. He moonlights as a handyman. And just last week, he was over at my house and realized that whoever installed the front door knob at our house put it on backwards. So before I knew it, he was taking the door apart and flipping it around the way it goes so that you couldn't just come to our front door on the outside and unscrew it and get in. He and his little boy came and changed the door locks for me. So he's still doing that kind of thing. Very resourceful. He can fix anything. And we're just so proud of him. One last learning style I'd have to add is role play. Have you ever seen those kids that want to wear some kind of costume 24/7? I have some granddaughters that live in their little Disney princess costumes, and I have a grandson that, much like some of his uncles, lives in a Spider-Man suit all the time. We were in San Antonio last month, and I don't think he took that Spider-Man suit off the whole time we were there. His father finally resorted to buying a bunch of t-shirts and painting spiders on the tops with matching coordinating pants so that they could talk this child into wearing normal clothes at least part of the time. But when he's home, he's in that little nylon Spidey suit. But truth be told, our whole family really loves learning in this way. Wearing costumes is kind of a homeschool trademark. And we will pack our costumes with us when we go to Williamsburg. Our colonial garb, we'll wear it. And we've taken kids wearing their buckskins and their coonskin hats to the Alamo. It's a great way to make history come alive, and some children really resonate with dressing up as whatever it is that they're studying at the time. So then another learning style pie chart I saw included one last section called combination. And let me just let you know, if you haven't guessed it already, that every one of my children and yours are a combination. None of them only learn in one way. Yes, it's helpful to know how they learn best, but we also want to give them lots of experience and opportunity to learn in other ways besides their main focus way, because the fact is that there are some things that they're going to have to learn in life that they can't learn by singing a song or dressing in a costume or putting something in their mouth. You know, at some point, they are going to have to learn how to read. They're going to have to learn how to do math. They're going to need to learn history and science. Give them opportunity to stretch and grow in these other ways of learning as well. So if you don't happen to know your child's particular learning style or main learning style, I wouldn't worry about it too much. Just give them opportunity to do a variety of things and help them grow in as many ways as you can. It's helpful when teaching multiple children at once to employ as many learning styles as you can simultaneously. Our goal should be to learn to use as many pathways as possible to get the knowledge into our children's hearts and minds. If you look at Deuteronomy 11, 18 through 21, you can see that God even makes allowance for this in the instructions he gives to parents. Therefore, you shall lay up these my words in your heart and in your soul. That's talking about memorizing, memory work, and bind them for a sign upon your hand. There we have the manual, kinesthetic kind of learning, that they may be as frontlets between your eyes. There you have some visual, and you shall teach them to your children, speaking of them. Again, that's auditory speaking. When you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up, walk, lying down, rising up, there's kinesthetic. Again, you're doing something. And thou shalt write them upon the doorpost of your house and upon your gates. And there you have the reading and writing. So that passage goes on, but I see value in providing multiple ways for your children to learn anything that you're teaching. I try to do this with my grandchildren. I've been doing monthly memory challenges for them all year. And when I send them the verses I want them to learn, I try to include some printables where they can see it and color it maybe, or do some kind of a craft activity that would be kinesthetic. And I will sometimes set it to music or send them songs that have already been set to music to help them learn the verse for the ones that are auditory learners, and include links for sign language for the verse. So again, the kinesthetic learners would benefit from that, and videos of other people doing the signs so that they can watch those, and the visual learners can do that. So just trying to use as many channels as I can to hide the word in their heart. And that's what we want to do as parents with everything we want to teach our children, is to use as many channels as we can to get it into their heads. So take a multi-sensory approach. It's a little bit like throwing spaghetti at the wall and seeing what sticks. And a few things really seem to make learning sticky for a wide segment of the population. First of all, I recommend modeling the behavior, because when it comes to children, more is caught than is taught. You've heard that before. And if you're trying to tell them to do something, but you're not doing that and providing the example yourself, they're going to likely follow your example more than they follow your words. So be sure to model the kind of behavior you're wanting from them. If you want them to be good readers, then you let them see you read all the time. If you want them to be courteous, then make sure you're using your good manners. If you want them to learn self-control and to stop throwing temper tantrums, then you be sure that you remain controlled when you're talking to them and don't give in to impatience and yelling. So modeling and mirroring are so important. The mirroring also comes into play when they've done something that they shouldn't be doing. If they hit their brother to take away a toy, we can walk through the steps. How do you ask for a toy? Can you say, please, may I have the next turn? And you just walk them through the step and have them practice it several times so that they are mirroring the right behavior. They're not just getting corrected for the wrong behavior, but they're being provided a model to mirror of the right behavior. If they don't come when you call, then you can just drop everything and practice coming when they hear their name called. And so we've done this with our toddlers a lot. If they're not responding, we'll say, okay, I'm sorry, but we're going to have to run through this again. We're going to have to practice having you come when I call. And so I'll put them across the room. And then when I call their name, John, come here, or David, come here. And they'll run to me right away. And I'll give them a big hug and praise them for a job well done. And then we'll send them right back across the room and practice it four or five more times so that they have that reinforcement of the right way to do it. So modeling and mirroring are one way to make things sticky. Another thing that I recommend is letting your kids have the freedom and the space to make mistakes, especially when the stakes are low. Sometimes the lessons that we learn when we make mistakes really stick with us the longest. I remember when I was in second grade, I took a test and I got every question correct on the test, but I made a zero on the test. And do you know why? Because I circled every answer instead of underlining it. The directions said to underline the answer, and I circled it. Well, I think that's a little bit ridiculous, but it certainly taught me to read and follow directions. So I learned from that mistake, and I didn't make it again. I didn't repeat it. And I feel like in our day and age now, we have a lot of parents that are unwilling to let their children make a mistake. And so they hover over them and they micromanage them. And the children grow up never having learned some very important lessons that could have been learned when they were younger if they had just been given the freedom to flub up from time to time. I don't mean in a dangerous way. Don't, you know, decide your kid needs to learn a lesson and let them run out into the busy street. You want to be a protector. Parent, but you don't want to be so hovering that they're never allowed to learn those valuable kinds of lessons while they're young and the stakes are low. So give them the freedom to make mistakes. Another way to make things sticky, as I mentioned already, is multiple exposures. Repeat it. Be repetitive about the lessons that you're trying to drive home and give them opportunities to learn it through multiple channels. And then music is also a great learning tool for most people, even if they're not particularly musical. If you're singing songs with the information you want them to know, a lot of times it will just go deep into their brain and stick with them for so much longer. How many of us can sing jingles to commercials that we heard? I mean, I'm almost 59, and I can sing you the jingles to commercials that were on television back before I even started school. And so those things stick with you. And some hymns that I haven't sung since I was younger, you know, our church doesn't necessarily sing all the same hymns that the church that I attended growing up sings, but when I hear them, I can sing them verbatim, even if it's been a decade or more since I last sung it, because it's so ingrained in me. Music really seems to do that. And so we have, with our kids, used music to teach Bible verses, to teach states and capitals in the U.S., to teach the presidents of the U.S. Growing up, there was Schoolhouse Rock that taught me the preamble to the Constitution. I still remember that, and I've used that same song to teach my children the Constitution of the U.S., and so forth and so on. Then another great way to make things sticky is through muscle involvement. If you can give them plenty of opportunities for hands-on learning. Now, I do a lot of handiwork and needlework and crocheting, and I have since second grade, and I'm really quite good at it after so many years of practice, but I never learned to tat, and my husband's grandmother had a tatting shuttle and knew how to tat, and I remember one of the first times I was at her house, I was admiring tatting and mentioned that I had always wanted to learn how to tat, and she said, oh, I can teach you how to tat. So she gets out her tatting shuttle and she shows me how to put the thread in my finger and how to hold the shuttle. And she ran through just a few steps and then she handed it to me. And I barely would get the thread in my finger and start before she was saying, no, 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 not like that. Here, let me show you again. And that happened about three or four times. She would show me, I would get it into my hands and barely get started before she, no, 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 you're doing it wrong. Let me show you again. And after about the third time, she said, well, some people just aren't very good at this, implying that I was never going to learn. And she put it away and wouldn't even let me hold it again. But I promise you, if she had just let me have it for 20 minutes, I would have learned how to tat. I know I am fully capable of tatting. I have done lace work for years and years, and I could do that kind of lace work too if she would just have let me kept it in my hands long enough to have that hands-on learning, because there's only so much that you can learn by watching somebody else do it. You sometimes have to have it in your own hands to really figure it out. So give your children that opportunity to get their own hands dirty, get their hands in the dirt when you're planting, get their hands in the paint when you're painting, get their hands on the hammers and the saws when you're building, and let them learn with muscle involvement. And then the last thing I would recommend, highly, highly recommend, is to minimize screen time. Even if the screen time weren't detrimental, which we know social media and a lot of the games that the kids are playing and some of the other things that they can get into on screens and digital devices are very dangerous. But even if that weren't the case, even if it were neutral, which it is not, it would be keeping them away from doing so much more important things like reading books and playing out in the sunshine and building and making things with their hands and all the other things that life really is about. It's not a digital life. And so I would really recommend minimizing screen time as well. And so, especially for these young mothers that I was talking to last week, I just encourage them to lay a good foundation for learning. When your kids are little, that is the time not to break out the screens and use them as a babysitter, but to do lots and lots of reading. And keep in mind that kids never get too old to be read to. You start with the picture books when they're little and just keep on reading. As long as they're in your home, we still read out loud to our kids. I'll read one book at lunchtime. My husband often reads another book aloud at night to the kids. And then anytime that we're traveling and we're in the car together on a road trip, we listen to books on tape and discuss them. I say books on tape, they're not tapes anymore. That shows my age. We listen to audiobooks and discuss them as we drive. And it's such a good bonding experience to share great literature together. So lots of reading, lots of problem solving. Let them do puzzles and thinking games and let them figure out solutions to problems at home. You know, if they butt heads with a sibling, let them try to work it out on their own before you step in and referee. Obviously, watch over and make sure there's no bullying and stuff like that going on, but let them learn how to solve their own problems to the extent that they're able to. And then also lots and lots of time outdoors. That sunshine is so important to them and to our health. And so I would encourage that too. Regardless what your child's learning style is, I wish you the best as you train up your children. Whether you're homeschooling or sending them off to school, you still are their first and most important educator. And so I pray that God will give you wisdom as you identify their learning styles and bless you as you train up these children for His glory. Thanks so much for listening today. If you have a question you'd like to hear covered on this podcast, message me on Instagram at Flanders_family or contact me through my website, lovinglifeathome.com. Before you go, if you've been encouraged by something you've heard on the show, do me a favor and forward the link to a friend or head over to Loving Life at Home on Apple iTunes to subscribe and leave a written review of the show. Your doing so will help others find me so they can listen too. Until next time, I pray the Lord will bless your efforts to build a loving home life centered on Him.